Today we have Professor Kapinski to talk to us, and he just went to Venezuela from November 21st to December 3rd, and he is here now to give us his observations, his insights, highlights of the trip, and most importantly, I believe, the application of what we can do here from what he has learned there. So, Professor Kapinski, thank you.
Well, this will be an informal sort of presentation in that I want to do a number of things, show you the slides of what the place looks like, and highlight and try to share with you some of the excitement, some of the delight in just going there. I almost stayed. it was beautiful. In the slides I'll be showing, you'll just get a picture of Caracas immediately, and that was the first thing that maybe I should talk and show those while I talk. Then I can get to the report and the highlights later.
Here we go.
You do when you look out the window of Doug Johnstone, who is the field coordinator. Look out of the window of his balcony at his apartment building, and look out over Caracas. This is just a narrow slice. 5 million plus people, and you say, "Oh, world evangelization is." Let me bring this lower. World urbanization has indeed a real challenge for the world mission. My first thought, after being a missionary in the bush of New Guinea and learning one language, Enga language, one culture, Enga culture, one worldview, Enga worldview, one lifestyle, Enga lifestyle, all of a sudden confronted with the pluralism and with the materialism and with the Western influence, this country, Venezuela, has the closest ties to the United States, I think, of any country in South America. You have bumper-to-bumper, big, fat, wide American cars, and you have all of the shops, all the shopping centers, all of that kind of thing. And then throw in the Hispanic zest for life, the bright colors of the clothing. Add the cultism, add the veneer of Roman Catholicism. I think less than 10% of the population is practicing Roman Catholic, less than 1% practicing Protestant. So in a country of what, some 27 million plus, you have a tremendous mission field. And here, this is all Caracas, the way it looks the next morning after arriving, and you are just confronted with the realization that the fields are white. And then with the, you say, well, how do I contact these people? How do I meet these people? How can I begin to do mission work here when my tradition and my training is sort of, hey, you equip the saints and then you extend yourself through them and they go out. But the church is very weak, very small in Venezuela, less than 1,000 members, approximately 600 communicant members. There are men in training, theological education by extension. There are two salaried pastors at the Venezuelan Lutheran Church and one pastor who is employed by the mission. And then there are tent-making pastors. One is an economist pastor, another is an agriculturalist pastor. And there are men in theological education by extension who are training to do the work of what we would call lay pastors, while they keep their jobs. This is the high school that the Missionary Johnstone's children attend. They have a full orchestra. They have a real tough curriculum. Inside the school area, one of the small courtyards, this country has been oil rich and gold rich. And well, our introduction to the work then got more specific. Instead of just looking out of a window, we went to one of the barrios. John Trudy preached in this little congregation in one of the barrios. It was attended by young people and women, no men. The children's choir, sang, and they stayed there for the early part of the service. And then one of the young Christian girls, with just a tremendous joy and delight in her newfound faith in Christ, was delighted to be teaching that to them in the Sunday school. This is the area in which that church that we just had the slides of is located, and you can see how the what a barrio is, and the poverty. Across the highway is a more wealthy, far more wealthy section of the town. This is the apartment building where Doug Johnstone lives, and also the headmaster of the Lutheran High School. You can see the bars. Bars are everywhere. They're on the gates for the parking lots, the gates for the walkways, and the bars are even on the windows of the apartments. So the big thing I learned in Venezuela is that a mass media strategy is being developed, which is carried out in close liaison between the Lutheran Layman's League's Christ for All Nations office and the missionaries and the pastors and the lay workers of the Venezuelan Lutheran Church. They have, this is Cristo para todas las naciones, Christ for All Nations. And this is the name they go under. They don't say this is the Lutheran hour in this Roman Catholic country with the heavy Roman Catholic history and so forth. This Christ for All Nations is the only radio religious broadcast in the entire country, and it is carried on, its work is done on more than 200 stations, so they've got the thing sewed up. Doug Johnstone on my right, and Mark Kempf on my left, or on the left side of the picture. And he was just transferred from Maturin, where he was a veteran missionary working with youth, to now be preparing program materials for Christ for All Nations. Here's Ken Peterson, a real gift to the work there, a man with a lot of imagination, a lot of good ideas, a lot of drive, so that the radio spots, the TV spots, the print media, the Bible correspondence courses, the drug awareness seminars, these kinds of things. He works closely with government agencies, getting their approval and their influence behind. Part of the strategy is to have storefront contact centers where people who hear something on the radio or see something on TV or whatever, or they can come to one of these contact centers for counseling, or they can come for to pick up a booklet, a drug awareness thing. They can come attend a seminar. They can do their home Bible class study and then come here and meet as a group, those involved in it, to discuss the lessons. It is not a worship center. It is a contact center and a meeting point out of which then deepening and closer relationships can be developed. John Trudy on the left and Bob Selle on the right here. A very blurry picture because I didn't have my flash along, and I probably went down to a 30th of a second in a dark room. They're advertising here a Bible study in the window at the contact center. They also were advertising a Christmas party for children. They have all kinds of ways to introduce themselves to the immediate urban community, to the people who run the shops and stores in the next block or whatever. They have secretarial help to fill out forms and get information on people. Robert Selly and wife Laura and the baby. A lot of modern shops, a very clean city, a very clean subway. You're really impressed with the numbers of people. Now this is a Lutheran church that was started back in the 50s, a Lutheran congregation, and part of their work is to use a medical center or clinic, dental clinic, and a sort of a resell it shop. They also have their legal services to help people who have trouble getting their wages from unscrupulous employers and the like. Inside of that church, the nave, and a special altar in the back area of the church. And that's Pastor Leon, Arjenis Leon, and Doug Johnstone. The resell it shop you're familiar with. But these very poor Christians of Caracas have much poorer people flowing into the country. Venezuela has the same problem the United States has. The illegal aliens are coming across borders everywhere. And so they're showing up in Caracas, and these people have tremendous compassion on those who are really hurting. This is taken two missionaries from Brazil that joined the staff. And, of course, they're very fluent in Portuguese and are busy learning Spanish. But the benefits of having international teams of missionaries so that urban strategies being employed and developed can be shared with partner churches, with the brethren, in Brazil in no time flat. A real, when these guys are on furlough, and a real blessing, I think, and a real advance, so that everybody isn't isolated and has to invent the wheel by themselves. Maturin, the mission main operation there used to be located above a pool hall here. Iglesia Luterana was upstairs, and they had their theological education by extension materials in some rooms, and a worship facility in another room, classrooms, things like that. Henry Witt was standing by the door. This is the square. This town has a population of about 200,000 plus, but has a downtown like a town of around, say, 10,000. So it has a huge Roman Catholic church, which dominates the central area of the city. The Roman Catholic Church gets subsidy from the government. It gets land donated by the government. It gets permission from the government to solicit funds for the building of the church from the entire populace. This is the modern hospital in Maturin. Now, this fellow here is the a statue of the Indian cult, and all of those posts there have significance. And this is a real vibrant a religious cult which is practiced. It is the main competitor, I would say, for the Maria Leonza cult, of which I have a paper written by Doug Johnstone which we'll make available for you to read. This is the new mission facility in Maturin, and they will have they have here area for missionaries to live. Henry Witt will be living here, and perhaps Richard Schlack, and then also Zilke and his wife. He's a new missionary from Brazil, and they operate as a team, and the team ministry concept rather than the Lone Ranger concept, I think, is a good one. When we think of sending a solo missionary into the middle of L.A. and say, okay, start something, you know, I wonder if that really is the best way to proceed. Some of the barrios and slum areas or more poor areas of Maturin, some of the nice areas of Maturin, paved boulevard and apartments and the like. Mike Tor Das, which is an absolutely beautiful city, just beautiful. The Orinoco River blows your mind. Its power, its beauty, its speed. Near this area, about a half a block away, is the site where the first church building worship facility will be constructed. Here's where they are worshiping now. This congregation formed as a result of bringing together home study, home Bible groups, you know, meeting in missionaries' homes, meeting in Christians' homes here and there, and then bring them together in a rented facility so that they can get together as a congregation and learn to know one another and whatever. And this is the type of housing that is just jammed, and these people purchase these apartments. And if you can imagine the challenge the missionary would feel did he not have the assistance of mass media, boy, it would be an awfully frustrating. But here it can be a joyful and a very optimistic approach that you have, because less than 9 weeks they had 32,000 calls in a telephone dial-a message, and they get over 200 responses a week for their Christ for All Nations radio shorts and TV shorts. Here's the Christ for All Nations contact center in Puerto Ordaz. Used to be the people out there could write to Caracas and have sent to them a Bible study, a correspondence course, or some materials, or this or that or the other thing. Now they can stop right in, meet the missionaries, pick up the materials, come there with questions, come for classes. Youth group meets there, drug awareness seminars, community services, these kinds of... Here's one of the youth groups meeting with Mike Tanney in the center. You can see what they expect. This is all ready for expansion. You got the street lights up. You got the curb and gutter in. You got everything marked off, and you're all set to go. Now, if you look in this slide and look way to the left, and then look all the way across to the right. And this slide picks up where the other one left off. All of this, now I'll go back to the other. Whoops. All of this area here doesn't have a single church, a single mission, a single Bible study group, a single nothing. Over 100,000 people live in those units there and there. Okay? So talk about the challenge. Talk about the opportunity. And these people moving in, looking for work, now's the time to reach them, not 5 years from now. Now's the time when they left family and friends and others behind, you know. So it is just plain exciting. People coming to that restaurant that we showed you earlier for worship service. People there are like people in California. Everybody accepts everybody. There is no division of skin, color or race or this or that or the other thing, Indian, black, white, orange, yellow, whatever, you know. Dana Bronas is the, each of these areas where they have a team of missionaries, like Puerto Ordaz, San Felix, there is a coordinator, okay? And he's sort of the head honcho of the group. And then Maturin has Henry Witt. And Caracas has Doug Johnstone there, but then they also have Lanza and Leon of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Venezuela, as well as Paul Brink would be the coordinator. Here's Dana's house, if you want to know what kind of houses missionaries live in, what kind of cars they drive, Toyota Land Cruiser. Here you can get a spit shine on your shoes for little or nothing and enjoy a cup of coffee that will curl your hair. Fresh vegetables. Caballero, a men's clothing store. Pick up the latest news. Dana writes news articles and gets free space in the local newspaper and addresses hurts and concerns and things that common people regularly have. Anything from a question about what the Bible may teach, or something about drugs, something about loneliness, something about family life problems. You can see they're ready to grow, and they are. They know they're going to grow. So there are 500,000 people in this Twin Cities of San Felix and Puerto Ordaz. The iron smelting is off in the background. I'm still swinging the camera. There's about 180 degrees large, huge industry, okay? And I mean, they really take up the space. Coming down from the knob, which suffered from a little strip mining scars of its own, lots of iron ore lying right there. These little barrios can spring up overnight. A whole bunch of trucks can come in with a bunch of sheet iron and whatnot and bring a bunch of people from some rural area, and the next morning they're there, and the government protects squatters. Squatters have rights. They have rights to property, and so that's why urbans like this place here wasn't there a week ago. And here it is, all built up. Rudy Blanc is the leader of the Theological Education by Extension program. I got a lot about that, written about that in my report, and how so many men who were trained, first of all in Argentina, one married a Peruvian, one an Argentinian, and one a Brazilian. They lost all three men. Here's one of the churches, San Felix. Pentecostals, all of these people disagree with one another, and so the one who disagrees goes out and starts another church the next day. And so this is where your Pentecostal growth is coming from. Scriptural adherence or doctrinal integrity or oneness of faith, message, anything. And this was flying out. I think that was Haiti down there. Well, enough slides.
But to give you a flavor of the country, I didn't see the slides first, enabled you better to recognize what I'm talking about. I had Debbie fight through some scribbled daily diary notes and putting together about a 30-page tome on the trip. And in addition to that, we also have available, and I'll get some jackets on these and put them down here, New Cults in Eastern South America and the Caribbean. And this is Doug Johnstone's paper on the Maria Leonza cult. And it is just excellent to give you an insight into the kind of challenges today's missionary is facing. And in the in my written report, some of the conclusions and applications I found were simply these. First of all, tremendous opportunities in world urban settings, foreign and domestic, have to be seized. We have been a rural church here in North America. We have been a tribal mission church overseas, and it's a new ballgame. There is no more retreating from the cities. There is going to the cities. And there is team ministry in the cities. And there is the combination of mass media with the follow-through and the development of interpersonal relationships by the missionaries as a result of these contacts. And, hey, I think Venezuela is ready to explode. You can imagine the frustration of the men with a field whose history begins back in, whatever, 1950, 52, somewhere in there. Now we're 1987, and they have only 1,000 members of the Venezuelan Lutheran Church. Their day is here. I would say that throughout this long history, they have never had more than 3 or 4 missionaries. And so it has been extremely difficult. But now they are at a time when Black Friday has descended with all of its impact, which is a day in March about 3 years ago when the Bolivar was devalued tremendously so that it had been $4 to $1. It became $8 to $1, and when I was down there, it was $26 to $1. And add to that the oil crisis and the plummeting oil prices, and what you have is 20% unemployment, 40% underemployment, and in the poor areas of San Felix, Rudy Blanc said there are an awful lot of people are lucky if they get to eat meat once a week. But anyhow, tremendous opportunities with all of this stress have to be seized and can be seized if mass media and if the LLL isn't off here by itself somewhere, and Board for Mission Services off here by itself somewhere, and we're not even talking to each other about, hey, Chicago or New York or L.A. or Denver or, you know, and everybody does their own thing. They can be seized by a team ministry approach, I think, better than the Lone Ranger in church planting. They can best be seized by national churches who have 10% of their membership enrolled in leadership training, and that's what Venezuela has. 10% of their membership is in theological education by extension and or evangelism training. And to me, that was go and do thou likewise, especially in view of the fact that we're going to have a tremendous shortfall in our church just filling pulpits in the coming years. So then, if men going through the seminary are not equipped to equip laymen or are not of a mindset that they should be theological educators by way of extension, that they should have their own little seminary at that church they're assigned to and be equipping the saints, like Ephesians 4 says, so that they can the more effectively help with Bible study groups, with whatever type of expansion in church planting efforts is available there. Non-threatening, helpful, brief, non-preaching radio and TV spots. These are needed in the United States. Well, we knew that beforehand. Theological education by extension using regional training centers is certainly the way we want to go. And also the idea of tent-making ministers. As they have an economist who supports himself entirely, but is also pastor. That's the place with the bell that got repaired. As they have a pastor who is an agriculturalist, a farmer, supports himself entirely, but is also pastor. The day is coming when we are going to have, especially in urban situations, groups of people who cannot support a pastor. How are they going to support a pastor they can't support themselves? Tent-making ministry is coming to the United States.
When you're saying tent-making, are you referring to like Paul and making the tent?
I mean guys, people being trained in a theological education and being made apt to teach and share the message, who know that the end is not a paying job, but their paying job is the same job they got now, while they're being educated, and it will be their job. But that they will be better equipped lay people, if you want to put it that way.
Do you think it's right for us who are trained here full-time for ministry to be tent makers, to have a trade, say, that we possess before we came here, to use that out on the field?
I think the day is fast coming when there will be opportunity to...
Mm-hmm.
There will be opportunity to do that.
Mm-hmm. Missionaries in Venezuela now that don't have a job on the side, are they fully supported by Synod?
Mm-hmm.
In the theological education by extension, or training local national leadership, for instance, one of our people from in the States would go down there and train the indigenous leadership. Would there be fruit of that in full-time pastors?
They have two salaried pastors, the church salaries. They have a lot of men who have, not a lot. They have a few men who have had 3 years of TEE, who have been ordained, who are preaching, who are teaching, and so on, and who are continuing their studies. Matter of fact, the man who is the president of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Venezuela has 3 years completed and 3 years to go. And he is the pastor of the congregation in San Felix, and he is the president of the Lutheran Church. And he's still got 3 years to go in TEE.
So how many...
But he is supporting... He is supporting... No, I think he is supported.
So there are two full-time Venezuelan pastors that have been ordained in the Lutheran Church there?
There are two salaried ordained pastors. How many others are non-salaried and functioning? I'm not quite sure. It may be the number of three or four.
Would they be... called and ordained?
They've been preaching and teaching, called by a congregation, and they have been installed, and their theological education is continuing, just as yours continues when you leave here. But they've got the prerequisites in. They've got the first three. They've got 3 years in.
Uh-huh. I was just going to say, it's getting kind of close to 12, but if there's anybody that has class right now, or would like to leave, I'd like to close with prayer, and then those of us who want to stick around and talk, you know, are welcome to. Comments?
Yeah. Just, I will get a copy or two of this down here, and it has in it the notes from a discussion with Blanc on TEE. It has the entire plan and orientation and goals of Christ for All Nations. It has examples of short radio spots and how, I didn't get a chance to read one, they conclude with a prayer. They're just a little paragraph. So those things you can pursue. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, thank you.